It's almost going to fall for Martinez. Antonio trying to get there. Martinez finishes to give away the man.
It's an absolute peach from the Paraguayan Miguel Almirón.
Atlanta United, in just their second year of existence, have won MLS Cup.
Ojo con la...
So, Patrick, I feel like right now we all need a dose of humility.
Yeah.
Sam Jones, quote, Dax McCarty.
I think he's talking about you getting ready for the media match here. You were asking for extended fields today.
Listen, if y'all don't want to run the full 110 meters, whatever it is, I mean, that's on you.
Yeah,
that's on you.
Well, that's why I play goalkeeper typically in these things. And my heart rate is still off the charts on my little thing.
Yeah, well, hey, speaking of soccer games that have terrible quality and no one is able to compete, Atlanta United, worst game of the season against DC United. We can't go to the underlying numbers and say, hey, good job doing that. We can't really go to anything and say, hey, good job doing that. It was not fun. It was ugly. And it brings up a whole lot of conversations that are a bummer to have.
Usually when we get ready for the show, we'll make some notes in a little document as to, you know, what happened in the game, you know, bullet points we want to talk about, little items. And last week, neither of us had the, you know, felt like I think it was necessary to, you know, fill in the blanks on some of those things. And same with this week. And I think this week it's partly because... I don't know. I feel like we're going to repeat a lot of the things that we've said previously, but because it was just kind of a continuation of it. And even Gonzalo Pineda said, like, this was unabashedly worse than how we've been playing. So, yeah, that's where we are now.
Yeah, y'all got, like, what, an hour and 40 minutes last week? You're not getting that this week. Sorry.
Yeah, not getting it today.
No chance. No chance. Because, like Joe said, a lot of the same things. Everyone recognizes it. The players recognize it. Everyone knows at this point. And we really would encourage y'all to go either check out the transcript or listen to the audio we got from Dax McCarty after the game. He really kind of laid it all out at this point, you know, talked about a lack of humility, lack of accountability in the locker room right now. Says things to the effect of guys, you need to have guys that have a little backbone. They can look at each other in the face and look at themselves in the mirror and say, I need to be better in all facets of the game. Talks about teams coming in and sitting in a back five, waiting for Atlanta to make mistakes in the middle of the pitch and heading the other way and capitalizing on it. And really, it sums up everything in about 7 minutes of audio.
Yeah, he kind of says it all. And the way that, you know, when you just kind of repeated some of the things that he said there, it can come off if you don't listen to it, which it has been open, by the way, for, you know, all listeners. This is the free version of the podcast. You can go check that out at 5stripefinal.com. the audio is up there for anybody to listen to. It should be in your inbox as well if you sign up for the free subscription to the Substack. But you know, it could sound like he is being kind of bombastic there, but he's really not. He's actually just kind of, he's just making firm points, I think, about, you know, how this team needs to kind of like recenter itself or refind itself in a way, because it is it feels like a starkly different team than the one that we saw in the first few games of the season, which were great. You know, it was fun attacking soccer. They were creating the underlying numbers. They were creating the overlying numbers. They were, you know, it was pretty much all good. And that's why it's not like in past years when things have gone off the rails with Gabriel Ayanze or whoever it might be, it was never good, really, typically, under them. And that's the one thing that's given me pause with Gonzalo here. Obviously, everybody's calling for his job. He knows that. We know that. And, you know, I kind of do think that it will be the case that at some point, you know, this season or going into next year, that he's not going to be the manager of this team. But I am just kind of holding out this weird feeling that, you know, we have seen this team play good, attractive soccer under him, and it's probably no surprise that these bad results and bad performances that we've seen in recent times have still come with some key players out missing, and I know that people will, like, you know, shake with rage when they hear that as if it's an excuse. It's not an excuse for the way the team plays, but I think it is just kind of, it's a fact that they don't have some of the key players that they were relying on coming into the season, playing for them out there. They've been not down to one backup center back, but they've been playing with a pair. They're basically their total reserve center back pairing for what, like 5 games now or something? So, and sometimes even worse. Sometimes there's been 3 center backs out.
Yeah, and that was readily apparent on Saturday when Noah Cobb and Luis Brohm had to try and stop Christian Benteke from reaching just about every ball in the air sent his way. They did not do that. They did not do that. And we saw the results of it. Christian Benteke, I think, alone had 1.66 XG auto himself off of headers.
Wow.
He was too good. Too good. Too good in the air. And too physically gifted to multiple inches taller than the starting center backs for Atlanta United in this one. Yeah. And that played a big role. Yep. And it's another thing where you're just like, man, I wonder what things are like on Earth, like 48 instead of Earth 1 right here, because there's a world where, you know, Edwin never makes that pass in Philadelphia or against Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. There's a world where Thiago doesn't do that corner. And there's a world where Steon Gregerson doesn't get a concussion in an Open Cup game out of nowhere and starts this game and everything is maybe fine, you know?
Yeah,
and at that point, you know, it's like Earth 48 or whatever has a supporter shield contender. It's brutal sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, man, I don't want to say that, like, we're not asking hard questions like Gonzalo. I think we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to some extent, I think we do kind of talk about the media's role in that, because I think some people want us to be like, hey, so
I would,
you're getting fired, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's just
I'd like to talk about
the point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not going to tell us anything. You know, it doesn't make anyone else want to fire him more. It's not going to change anything. We're not going to learn anything from that. But it does kind of have like a vibe of like, okay, it kind of feels like we're all soft smiles and gentle voices and everything like that as we watch someone who we generally respect go through a pretty shit time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it's you know, it's just the way that sports is, obviously. You know, I wrote about it at the beginning of the season, and I thought, again, last year with the Falcons, Arthur Smith had a great quote just like citing like this Latin line, amor fati, which is like love of one's fate, and that's just kind of the kind of motto you have to adopt as a coach, because a lot of things can happen, a lot of things that can happen that are outside of your control, and you're kind of at, you know, the fate of the way that whatever, you know, whatever direction the wind blows, and sometimes they're great for you. And sometimes they're not, and you have to just kind of embrace it as it happens and try to do your best. But yeah, I know, I'm sure that there are fans that will be upset with, we're not really kind of like pinning down Gonzalo on his job status. And I don't know, to me, that's just never been, what I see as my role personally. It's just about trying to convey whatever is happening with the team, trying to get that out of the coach and then conveying it to everybody. I think he knows his job is under threat for sure.
He's well aware. He said this multiple times today. We talked to him today at training before they go out to Cincinnati on Wednesday. And, you know, the conversations were tinged with this kind of understanding, like, okay, things are bad right now. He's been a professional in soccer for, you know, the majority of his life at this point. He's seen this, y'all. He knows what's going on. He knows how this works. And he understands that if the results don't change, then that's it. Mm-hmm. And it even got existential at one point. He said that, you know, long after we're gone, this club and this badge will still be here. And at first I thought he was like, I legit thought he was like, we're all going to die someday.
That's what I thought.
Because the way he phrased it, I think this was a translation thing, was we will pass.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I took that obviously as like, oh, we will all die one day. You're right, Gonzalo.
Right.
But I think he just meant we're gonna leave the club at some point.
That's true. Yeah. But he said, you know, but he said that, you know, the fans will be here forever. The badge will be there forever, and so, you know, that's what's most important for a fan, is to know that, like, the club is in good stead. And again, like, I always want to say, I think fans are, you know, valid in whatever feeling they want to have. Like, you know, we're not trying to dictate any feeling to have to anybody, and nor should we. And I totally understand that where the real frustration comes from with a team and a club that's, you know, kind of held itself up to a certain standard rhetorically and has been really unable to live up to those standards for, since 2019. Mm-hmm. So I understand, and that's a long time for that to kind of continuously happen. I think that every year it's like, it's almost like Lucy pulling the football. I think that, again, this is just how fans feel, where it's like, okay, this is the year where we're finally going to be, you know, we got players, et cetera, et cetera. And then something happened, you know, and the ball gets pulled out and we're looking really silly, flat on our ass here. But all that to say, I mean, like, seriously, things actually have tangibly affected the way that this team's able to play because of some of the things that have happened. So that's just a reality of the situation. And it was striking to me to hear Gonzalo just kind of talking through it and like focusing on, you know, the games that are coming up, you know, not just this Wednesday, but, you know, the everything that they've got on the schedule throughout the month, the rest of May and June. Without being like, you know, your job's under threat, though. Like, you're really thinking about, you know, what you're going to be doing when you go to Nashville or when you go to, you know, wherever. But and I think that shows that he's just, like, still fully, like, mentally committed. He's not – I didn't hear anything that would make me think that he is not – that he isn't just thinking about this team and what they have to do as opposed to his own personal situation.
For sure. And, again, the background – for him and the background for Garth is Seattle. And we all, I think, if you followed MLS since even just Atlanta United came around, you kind of understanding that Seattle has been able to figure it out as the year goes along relatively often. You know, he's been in situations like this before. So there's a clear understanding that the results need to be better. There's also a clear understanding that things turn around in MLS. We see this all the time. And it could get better. That being said, we know the reality of the situation right now, and it's not good. It's not acceptable for this team standards. It's not acceptable for a fan base that still outsells everyone else in this league in every measurable thing. It's just not good enough. And the reality is that those results can spiral on you. They can cause players to lose confidence, and the question becomes, can the same leadership regain that confidence? And it's a fair question to ask at this point, because, like we've said over and over again the last 2 weeks, once that confidence is gone, it is gone. You just don't necessarily get it back. Now, if a new manager comes in, they aren't going to they aren't going to change everything about how Atlanta United plays. That's not going to happen. That's not the profile of a manager this team is going to look for, most likely. You know, they're going to come in and they're going to say, we want to be proactive. We want to be on the front foot. We want to press. We want to do all these things. And it is what it is. It's just going to be the same. But the messaging might change enough for the players to find that kind of understanding and belief again. And that is what you were looking for and a managerial change at this point. I think this can still be salvaged. I want to believe it can. The underlying numbers still tell me it can, even if they weren't in Atlanta's favor in this last game. But it's worrying. It's worrying when they start to dip off like that.
Yeah, when you lose your confidence, it really can feel like, and I'm not even just talking about a player, a soccer player, but like anyone can lose their confidence in whatever they do or in like their own like humanity. And that's when you go into like depressive states, and it can be hard to work through that. And sometimes it feels like when you're in the middle of one of those that like nothing will go right for you and that you're just kind of doomed to all eternity into this, like, you know, this downward spiral. And sometimes you do just kind of need something to go your way. And then, you know, things can really start to change. And I think especially on the soccer field, and especially if, you know, one of those things that goes your way is, you know, a player getting healthy and coming back into the team and making a real impact. Maybe that's like a Jhande Silva type, for example. Maybe he can be, you know, a player who can, you know, come into the team and then combine with Thiago, and then Thiago can have some more confidence. But right now, yeah, it does feel like it's just they're so starved of any kind of positive signs. And a lot of it's self-inflicted, right? Yeah. This team continues to concede goals right after they score. It's like when they score, they can't kind of hold that feeling of accomplishment for very long before it vanishes. And that's what makes this all the more frustrating, is that you can't find that thing to grasp onto that can look like it's that light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that that's what Gonzalo Pineda is trying to do with this team. He's trying to lift them up in a way to say, like, look, this is what we, like, you know, you guys are capable of it. You know, there's the light at the end of the tunnel. You can get there. He's trying to show them what that is. But, you know, in these spells of form, it's just really hard to do that and have players to buy into it. And it just comes back to the point you were making, Sam, which is that, you know, sometimes it gets to a point where you just feel like you need to bring in different leadership to get a new message across, to get that feeling back with the players. And I think time will tell whether that's the case here with Gonzalo. I did want to say something, Sam. I said his fate was like a fait accompli in the instant reaction we did. And I feel like that's taking it too far. And I want to like publicly kind of retract that particular statement, because it makes it seem like the decision has already been made and he's just in a pure lame duck situation. And I just don't want to assume that. I probably overstepped there. So I want to kind of take that back. But, you know, I do think that he's clearly, you know, kind of got his back up against the wall as the manager of this team. And there are really hard games coming up. But if some of those good things, some of those, you know, those lights at the end of the tunnel can appear during a tough stretch, then maybe that can make them even more tangible for some of these players to see and grasp onto because of the level of competition they'll be going up against. But obviously it's going to make things really difficult here in the coming games, not just this one coming up against Cincinnati.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point about it not being a done deal, again, I just have to reiterate that Garth is going to approach this differently than any of us will. Whether you're a fan listening, whether you're me or Joe, he's just going to approach this differently because that's the way he's always kind of operated. You know, he's operated with patience and with what numbers are telling him and everything like that. So I think we will not see a rash decision made. When it is made, it will be, you know, it'll be the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be the real thing.
Yeah. And to that point, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I don't think that, you know, I think that they would tell you that our best chance to win games right now is to keep Gonzalo in charge of the team through this stretch, because what are you going to do? Like, have Rob Valentino take over the team with less coaching support around him, most likely, if you were to let go of Gonzalo? Who knows what happens with some of the other assistants there? But yeah, that's kind of, you know, I just know that that's one, a name that gets thrown out
can
there.
I, yeah, can I fight as, with like, the internet real quick? This,
absolutely. Yes,
let me just shadow box to the internet real quick.
I was trying to antagonize you into doing this. So yeah,
oh, good.
This
great.
Perfect. This has gone straight to plan.
Look, y'all, we love Rob. We think he's a great guy. I think he, you know, very likely has a potential chance at being a head coach in MLS one day. I think that's completely plausible. But there's been this weird, like, weird sentiment that he's the savior.
Yeah.
Like if Gonzalo just got out of the way and they handed all the reins to Rob Valentino, everything would be fixed. And yeah, Rob went 4-2-2 in his 8 games. That's pretty good. It was 8 whole games, though. And it was immediately after Gabriel Heinze got done doing a fucking Junction Boys on Atlanta United.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, and also, I think anyone could have come in there and just been like, hey, everyone good? Here's some water. And you probably could have gone 4-2-2 with that setup.
Yeah. That's the only time Atlanta has changed their manager. Well, that's not true. It's not the only time they changed their manager in season, but
shout out Stephen Glass.
It was that time was like all hands on deck for Atlanta United in terms of you had to pull, I think Matt Lowry like came in to like help, you know, with, you know, first team training. When Atlanta United made their first in season move by firing Frank DeBoer, Atlanta United too was not playing. So they had to, you know, Stephen Glass was able to come over to the other side and be the interim manager. I want to stress to people that you can't just, like, you have finite resources at the club right now in terms of the personnel that you have. So if you fire a person, and it's probably more than if the team were to fire Gonzalo, you're probably also losing De La Torre. I would think at the minimum, you're going to lose other personnel as well. And so you have less to work with to try to replace them. And you've got the twos who have got a bunch going on. They're, you know, clearly they just made the hire with Javier Perez. So they're trying to like staff up really. And it's just not the ideal time to make a move again right now. I'm not saying that it couldn't happen this season. In fact, I kind of think that if things continue on this trajectory, especially after players come back, then I think it clearly will. But I just want to put that out there as a reason for why. Because I know that there's frustration about them not having made a move at this point after the DC game. And the timing and the schedule plays into it.
I do have a thought in my head that the kind of last measure here is that Steven Gregerson gets back in the lineup and they assess from there.
Yeah.
At that point, you'll have a 9+2. You'll have all three DPs technically available. And if the results continue after that, then yeah, I think that's probably a wrap. So, we may find out this week. Stian seems set to clear concussion protocol. He was in training today. He will be tested one more time tomorrow, I believe, and could get a run out against Cincinnati and almost definitely against Nashville.
I believe that he needs to like kind of just like wake up tomorrow with no symptoms, basically, from having participated in training today.
For sure. So, I mean, if everything is back like that to that level, then it's still not clicking and it's still spiraling. Then maybe then. But it's a tough ask right now. Again, Garth's going to be more patient than all of us. And like you said, Joe, I think it's a good point that right now is just kind of the worst possible time to do it with so many games coming up and so much happening. It's going to be tough to reorient and readjust in a pretty difficult stretch. You know, it's not saying it can't happen, but I do kind of agree with that sentiment. So,
I think it's also evidence that it's not like it's so bad like it was under Heinze. Like, I think with Heinze, it's a little different because I think that they found out about the water thing in particular, probably, and then realized that they had to do something about that, like to kind of keep them legally in good light. Like, they had to act when they find out that, you know, the manager is kind of behaving inappropriately like that.
Is that a I think, I feel, or an I know?
Oh, it's a I think. It's an okay. I think. I'm just speculating there. Yeah, there were definitely other reasons. I mean, he was, by all accounts, just terrible to work for.
Yeah. There's
my
like,
point is, like, if they really felt like a manager, like, you know, getting the coach out was going to help the team, then they would. Like, I'm not saying that they... it's just because of the schedule, but I think that, you know, yeah, that, like, they're not so displeased with Gonzalo that, you know, they feel like it's a, you'll be a Ewing effect here, or like, yeah, right, they'll be better when, if he's gone.
It feels like when this happens, it will be like a reverse Gabby, and that pretty much no one will be happy to see him go.
Yeah.
Right. It's just totally different interactions on a day-to-day basis with this person. So just something to keep in mind, right? It was different scenarios, different issues. And yeah, maybe that does grant him a little more leeway. It would for me if I was in charge. I'm not in charge. We'll see. Joe, let's talk about how to fix it. If this does turn around, it'll be because some kind of messaging in the last little bit here has clicked on some level. And the message to us in the media over and over again, and I'm sure to the players over and over again, has been about simplifying. That's what we kept hearing over the last couple of media sessions, I guess. Simplify. And it's great in theory. Great in theory. But I do kind of wonder what that looks like, how it affects things, and if you can do it with the same personnel. Because, Joe, I have a theory about what you can do to kind of change things up. But first, I wanted to get your thoughts on maybe an understanding of what simplify actually means in this context.
Yeah. So the what I think about is when in 2019, when the flippening happened with Frank DeBoer, and they went from being this kind of very stodgy, stagnant team that was trying to keep possession and keep teams out to really playing a free attacking brand of soccer. And I think that that was actually simplifying things. And it may not have been simplifying in terms of the types of passes you're trying to connect and whatnot, but you basically, and I don't know if Frank DeBoer should be given credit for this or whoever should be given credit for this, but the players seem to be playing with a freer minds during the second half of that season. And a lot of that, honestly, is down to Tata and the way that he had kind of drilled that team and trained them into knowing how to play in a certain shape and with certain types of personnel. But, you know, I thought that they really understood it, and to the point where they were able to kind of just go out there and play. And so, to me, that's kind of what comes to mind, and hopefully what could happen here.
Something that's, like, people keep asking, like, oh, why doesn't the team change everything up or anything like that? And Tata never really, really did that.
Yeah.
You know, it was all the same principles. Even when they did switch to the back three on that playoff run, it was mostly the same still. It's like, oh, why doesn't Gonzalo adjust to team by team and everything like that? And there are minor adjustments. You know, it's just the principles stay the same.
The back three was actually just a way to, like, when most coaches talk about shape, like the shape of a team, it's like kind of your defensive shape. It's like how you will set up in your block. And Tata, like, kind of just changed the defensive block to more match the attack, the way that they organize themselves in the buildup and attack. Like, even when they were doing the 4-2-3-1 his first season, you would have Jeff or Carlos Carmona, somebody dropping into that back line to create the back three, and they would push up the fullbacks as the wing backs, and, you know, the team would manipulate itself to basically kind of create that shape. But they were leaky defensively, both in 2017 and then that opening game of 2018 when they gave up four goals in the opener to Houston. I think that Tata just wanted to, like, simplify things and say, okay, let's just, like, not be so let's not be changing our shape so much when we're coming in and out of, like, offensive and defensive organizations. And let's just kind of maintain this. And he, I remember he hated this about it, but he kind of sacrificed the team's ability to press as much. He was like, yeah, I'd like to be playing 20 yards higher up the field, but we have to kind of drop because we have this shape and give up some of the ball a little bit. But it ended up helping the team. And, you know, I don't know if there's, like, a tactical shift that Gonzalo could make in that respect. I wouldn't expect him to go to a back three, and I don't think he should either, because I don't think this team, the personnel, would really fit it the way that they would those Tata teams. But something in that sense, I'm kind of giving, like, a very broad kind of analysis instead of, like, a specific diagnosis of how you could change things. But anything in that respect where you just feel like the players are thinking less and able to just go out there and play more. And especially Thiago Almada, who I think is getting really frustrated, and Gonzalo Pineda talked about this a little bit today. And I think the frustration is resulting in him making poor decisions, Thiago, and just not being at his best. Despite the fact that I think everybody would tell you, like, no player on this team is, like, dogging it out there. I think everybody's really trying, but sometimes when you have that frustration built up, it really affects you in a negative way.
For me, that manifests in how he positions himself and how he'll come back to the ball at times. And it's that Sasha quote we talked about last week, a whole bunch of just kind of not maintaining that tactical discipline. Same for Tristan at times as well. And I think this gets into what I want to talk about as far as simplifying goes, because in my mind, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking about it in the sense of like, okay, this team just needs to get the ball off their foot sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many moments where they're trying to do dribbly boy things again. And that's why it feels like 2022 at times to me, because they start trying to do dribbly boy things and it's oh my God, Zeke Barca running around again and being frustrating and not just making the simple pass and not leading teammates into passes and transition moments and ignoring kind of the basic things that make a attack tick. And so to fix that, I don't necessarily think there's like a tactical thing that can really alter that, but you can kind of shift the personnel on some level. And so what we saw in the second half against DC United, where Dax McCarty comes in, he's central, and he's essentially, I don't want to call it a single pivot because I didn't really get a chance to really dig into it, but he's basically central in a three with Tristan and Bartek pushing up. And it immediately got quicker. The tempo increased. Players were moving the ball side to side quicker. Players were getting the ball off their foot quicker. And I think that's what Dax brings to a team. But it also offers some stability in midfield that can help out. It can improve that press as well, I think, once you have kind of more dynamic players in it. And it also keeps Thiago higher kind of naturally.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of forces him to be like, okay, well, I can drift in a bit, but I am technically on the wing. I do kind of have to stay forward, right? But as I tuck in, I know that Caleb can shift up and be more involved in the attack. And I thought that was really effective for the moments that Caleb was able to get forward on a night when Brooks wasn't effective getting forward and hasn't been effective for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, and so maybe that's more of a tactical change than I'm even really hinting at. But for me, it seems like a pretty straightforward move potentially to simplify things, if we want to use the phrasing.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think that by moving Thiago into that left wing role, it also kind of fixes a problem for you there, because I don't know if anybody wants to see.
Oh, yeah, there's no good answer there right now. The yeah. I mean, if Shonda is healthy, then fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But I'm still not even convinced that that's the best option.
And that was, of course, the move that Gonzalo made in against DC to bring McCarty on for Mosquera. And he said that he did that knowing that Silva was going to be coming back into the game at the 60th minute mark. So they were going to go about 10 minutes with Thiago playing in that left wing role. This is probably not enough sample size in that particular personnel set to be able to judge whether that was positively or negatively affecting Thiago and whether him being out there was helpful for the team as opposed to him being elsewhere. But I like it. I like the idea of trying to get more midfielders that provide you stability in the game, especially one like McCarty, who is kind of one of those kind of coach on the field types and still has a lot to his game. Like, I think as much as, maybe not as much, but you know, like Jeff Larenowitz-ish, like and not sure. Even like the good Larenowitz, like the best Larenowitz that we've seen. I think that McCarty can have that level of influence in the team still.
He might be the cleanest passer of the bunch.
Yeah,
like as far as his,
he's like the most decisive.
And he's making
doesn't
decisions.
Do it fancy.
And so I guess it brings up the question, like if you don't go with the. With the three in midfield because you want to get Shonda back and get back to those principles, which I think is probably the most likely option now that I really think about it. But do you take out Tristan for Dax at this point? I mean, you got to try something.
Yeah.
And right now, Tristan isn't connecting on those things and is part of that sloppiness in a way that's frankly pretty disappointing for a player that seemed really exciting when he first came in and has kind of not been figured out, but the breath of fresh air has worn off with him.
Yeah.
Because when Tristan came in, it was like, oh my God, a midfielder doing competent things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he stopped doing those. It's just less shocking to see it.
Right. Yeah. He definitely loses the ball a lot more than I think when he first came into the team, I was like, wow, look at this, like really press resistant midfielder. And that's not to say he doesn't have that. I think he is the kind of like of that style of player, but he's not Darlington Nagbe. Like he's not that level of can't take the ball off the guy. And he's probably doing a little bit too much to the point that you make about Dax of just being like a simple player, but that can sometimes be more effective than a player who's really talented, but is, you know, taking too many touches on the ball and slowing up the pace of the whole team. And I think that that's where I think Dax could actually give you an injection of tempo into the game based on the way that he plays the game with just the simple, you know, receive, you know, trap and pass, just not a lot, but it keeps things ticking. And I think that that's what this team could use right now, because when I see them kind of set up in their offensive organization, to me, it's starting to look stagnant just because it's slow and teams are, you know, in a 5-4-1 and set up to defend it. And it just seems neutered when they have the ball. So that's obviously the big conundrum for this team right now.
You got to start dragging people around. You got to start breaking lines. You got to start moving the ball quickly to make those things effective. And I think Dax can provide that. Again, like, it's not like we're overhyping him here. He was an effective starter last year for Nashville.
Yeah.
And if I'm Nashville's gonna throw best out, moments.
If I'm going to throw out another idea, it would be Caleb Wiley to move him up to left wing. If you can't start Silva, if it's like either him or Mascara,
right from the jump here,
I know you do, but let me tell you that, like, to me, I feel like Caleb is getting wasted right now in this setup because he's not able to use what he's good at offensively. He's kind of playing as a passer in the back line of three. And I just feel like there's so much more to his game, especially physically with his speed. Like he can, you know, Gonzalo's talking about playing these vertical balls to break the back line of a 5-4-1. And I feel like Caleb would be an ideal player to be making those runs. And I just feel like you're not getting the best of him. It's probably good for him, probably good for his development to be in a more, I would say, like kind of defensive role with this team. But when I'm just trying to think about who could be the best players out there for you, I feel like there's just better uses of him than what we've seen these last few games.
I agree. And I would like to see Caleb get forward a little more often and like to see Brooks's crossing ability relied on less, because one, he hasn't been good.
Yeah.
This year in his delivery. He just hasn't. And two, it's relatively predictable at this point, especially because he's always done this where he just doesn't get the ball off his foot quick enough in those moments. It lets the defense get reset. But the trade-off here is obviously you have to bring in Ronald Hernandez,
right,
left back. And I'm going to be real. I don't think that fixes anything. I don't think it fixes anything. But I agree that you want to see Caleb get forward a little more often. And, you know, the reason he doesn't is because Brooks is getting forward so often, mm-hmm. and then the rest defense principles for Atlanta United, if both fullbacks get forward, it's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
So he has to watch Brooks and kind of key in on that. If you maybe tweak some things there, maybe you do feel a little more comfortable. I don't know exactly what it would take. I think maybe you invert Brooks and have him not as far up the field and down the line, and let Caleb get forward a little more, and maybe you are still comfortable in rest defense at that point, but it is a little risky. It's kind of a tough question to answer.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely, don't get me wrong. Like my idea is definitely FIFA brain for sure. It's like, you know, what you do, you pull all your fast players on the field. I just feel like another thing is like about this team is I feel like they don't have that kind of like game breaking player with certain physical traits to use on the field right now. Like, for example, Tito Villalba was for Atlanta United in the heyday. And it's not that Tito was the best player in the world, but what he did have was that ruthless speed and then an ability to really strike the ball cleanly. And sometimes he would just strike it cleanly and it would go into the corner, you know, and it happened several times. But the threat that he presented with his speed, I think, made teams really factor that into their game plans and have to adjust to Atlanta United. And I don't feel like they have that player right now who's really, really threatening these back lines, especially in behind. I know that that's something Gonzalo's is talking about. He's like, when you're in a 5-4-1, there isn't the space is behind them. It's not it's not to the flanks, to the wings. And so that's where I feel like Atlanta's like stuck in this situation of trying to have to like break every team down with this brilliant bit of, you know, passage through the middle of the field or something, and it's just not coming off. It's either that or it winds up on, yeah, Brooks or Saba's foot on that right side, and the service has just not been good.
No. I think to wrap up here, Joe, because we're already 40 minutes in a podcast we said was going to be short.
We did it again.
We haven't been to the questions yet. I want to point out that I think the mood around the team is in the right place. I don't think anyone has bailed on this. I don't think anyone has panicked. I think that everyone understands that there needs to be more urgency. And I don't think anyone has stopped playing. I don't think that the locker room has, quote unquote, been lost. And if that colors anything for you, fair enough. If it doesn't, fair enough. But I think it's important context to add. Real quick, just to look forward. Atlanta goes to Cincy on Wednesday. That is as difficult a road trip as it gets in MLS. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to play in a 5-3-2 block and make it difficult for Atlanta United. Godspeed. And then there's Nashville, who they got that in their bag. They do. I wouldn't be surprised to see them go to it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're on the road against a technically a rival who've been pretty god-awful this year. And if you come out of those with two losses, then I don't know. Maybe that's an announcement. Maybe that's an announcement. But it's going to be a difficult week.
Yeah, I would expect them to continue to have to face lines of five at the back.
Why would you not?
Even if I were running a team that came up to play Atlanta, and even if we weren't normally, like if that wasn't our normal setup, yeah, I would absolutely probably do something just for that game to put ourselves into that shape. And until Atlanta shows they can break it down, they're going to continue to face it.
Fun. Are we all having fun? I'm not.
I'm having fun.
Maybe we'll have more fun with the questions. Let's go to those right now. Joe Patrick, TaseX asks, if we are now on an actual Pineda outwatch, who would be some candidates to take his place? Marsh doesn't want to seem to come back to MLS. Bob Bradley would be an idea. Zidane on Uncle Arthur's boat. I just saw Doyle's post about Ronnie Dyla.